So, the secret of life is just relaxing and enjoying the passage of time. Any fool can do it, James Taylor says. Well, good news, I'm not a fool. I have trouble letting go. That's what I'm talking about this morning. Letting go of holding on. And this is really about skillful living. It's about, instead of seeking happiness, finding the ways that we cause our own unhappiness and letting go of them. That's what I want to talk about this morning. Because life is change. And I don't let go easily. That may be hard for some of you to believe. Control is our grand illusion. We're never giving up control of anything. We're only giving up our illusion of control of any given thing. Now, my mom tells me about when I was 4 years old in nursery school. I remember this, but my version of the story seems very different from hers. I remember rehearsing in our classroom this day that we were going to have a program at night in the cafetorium, right? So we're practicing for our program, and the teacher lined us up and told us exactly where to stand. And then she made us line up that way so that we went on stage in that order. And we sang our song, and then we filed off in that order. And that night at the program, we got on stage, and everyone was in the wrong place. So I just put him in the right place. And my mom said that people were laughing. I don't remember that. I just remember that everybody was in the wrong place, and they needed help. So... That's sort of an indicator of how I've lived my life since then. A director from the very, very beginning. So, you know, the Buddha says all things are impermanent. All feelings arise and die away. All suffering comes from holding on to that which is impermanent. Dang it. I know, right? Things change, we don't want them to, that causes us pain. So one, I'm gonna just talk about some of the things that we tend to hold on to, and maybe we don't even think of, maybe I'm gonna give you some new ways to think of this and maybe some tools for letting go. I don't know, but I know for me, control is a big thing for me to let go of. I mean, I grew up in an alcoholic home, and my sense of order is a lot of what made me feel safe. And so I go out into the world, which is very disorderly at times, you may have noticed. Even my very own home can be very disorderly at times. And I want to fix it. And from trying to fix something that, first of all, is not broken, does not need to be fixed, and which is impossible for me to completely fix anyway, at least to my standards, I cause myself pain. And you would think I would learn about this. And I read a story, this was a few years ago, but it really stuck with me. There's in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, it's syndicated, so you may have seen it too. There's an Ask Dr. Fox. He's a veterinarian. And so people write in and ask questions about their animals. And this guy wrote in and said, you know, I have a cat and a dog. My dog is trained when he sees me come in the door. He knows it's feeding time. He walks to his bowl and he sits and I get his bag out and I pour it in the bowl and then he eats. My cat, I have not been able to train. I walk in the door, the cat runs around my legs, almost trips me, follows me into the kitchen, jumps on the counter that he's not allowed to be on. I throw him in the floor. He jumps on the counter again. I throw him in the floor again. I get the can out. I put it on the plate. And or I get the can out, I put the plate in the floor, and just as I'm about to scoop the food out, he sticks his head in the plate and it ends up hitting him on the back of the head. Why is it that I'm able to train my dog and I can't train my cat? Here's the good part. Dr. Fox's answer was, well, you've trained them that if he meets you at the door, tries to trip you, jumps on the counter twice, and sticks his head in a bowl, food will fall from the sky. That is how I live my life a lot. I think that what I'm doing is actually managing things, when really things are kind of going to go the way they're going to go, whether or not I do all of that stuff in between. And it's the stuff in between that gets your hair dirty, you know, when the cat food hits you on the back of the head. And so one of the things that is a lifelong practice for me to be letting go of is my perfectionism. You know, things aren't perfect. They're just not. But golly, sometimes it's my own competence that stands in the way. I've been good at a lot of things, and that sort of makes me think that I've been controlling those things. And then when they seem to be out of control, it freaks me out. And also the thing is, I love to take the credit when things go right because I'm controlling them, but it's not so fun to take the blame when things go wrong because I didn't control them well enough or I controlled them wrong or whatever. And the downside of even taking credit for the things that go well is that there is enormous pressure. There's enormous pressure. Mostly it's not from people outside of me. Although I will say I've had jobs where I kept raising the bar and then that was the expectation. I was like, I'm never gonna be able to rest. I just need to do crappy one day and, you know, let them lower the bar a little bit so I don't have to work so hard. No, that's actually not possible for me to do, but. But I have these questions that I learned that I can ask myself when I get into, my husband and my daughter call it a frizz. Mama's in a frizz, and that means I'm trying to get a bunch of stuff done at once, and I'm getting angrier and angrier that it's not all falling into place, and that it's usually them who have made the mess that I'm having to clean up, right? And they warn each other, Mama's in a frizz. I don't do that much anymore. Can you vouch for me on that, Bob? Yes, I don't do it. I don't do it as much anymore. And these are the questions I start to ask myself when I get into this place, if I can remember to stop and breathe, is, okay, does this really have to be done? And if it does really have to be done, does it have to be done by me? Is there somebody else who can do it? Am I really the be-all, end-all of how this dish goes in the dishwasher? Does it have to be done now? If I'm making myself crazy, and this is something that doesn't have a deadline on it, why am I making myself crazy on it? And then the last question, does it have to be done perfectly? Because no, it doesn't. If you don't get every single dish in the dishwasher, you can put the extra two in the next load. I know. Not really. Another thing, and this is related, that I have seen myself having trouble letting go of, although I'm getting a lot better at this, is I want to help others. They seem like they really need it, right? So I'm going to help them. I'm going to help them. And, you know, some people call that interfering or meddling. You know, I think one of my first weeks here, Ellen was giving a talk on, you know, mind your own business. Releasing people and loving them as they are allows them the dignity of their own mistakes and allows them to learn from their own mistakes so that they don't make those mistakes perhaps again and again. And I can see ways, looking back, I try not to do this now, but when my daughter was very little, I redid a lot of the things that she did. And the message I was sending to her was, you didn't do it quite well enough. And I really regret that. I regret that I didn't have the spiritual maturity at that time to step back and let her do what she was doing. And, you know, we talk about it now, and she's okay with it. But when I feel like I need to help, here are a couple of tools I use. The word wait. Why am I talking? W-A-I-T. Why am I talking? Sometimes the kindest thing I can do is to just shut my mouth. Sometimes it just is. And if I feel like I do need to say it, I have to make sure, is it true? Is it helpful? Is it important? Is it necessary? And is it kind? Because if it's true and it's not kind, if it's not necessary, why am I saying it at all? So a lot of times when I think I'm being helpful, I'm not actually being that helpful. And this is all about letting go of my control of things. This is all about control. Helping other people when they haven't asked you, and especially when they've asked you not to, is about control, is about trying to control that which cannot be controlled. And it just creates resentment for you because they're still not doing it right, and from them because here you are up in their business. Chris Chenoweth, how many of you know, do you know him at all? Yes, he's a dear and longtime friend of mine. He does the Positive Christianity Spiritual Retreat Cruises, which I've which I usually do the music and some speaking on. He said one time in his daily reminder, the mark of a spiritual person is how well they handle a flat tire or a missed flight, the little ups and downs of life. And sometimes I am, if you have a crisis, call me. I am so good in a major crisis. I know how to handle it. I keep my calm. I'm good at that. It just happens to be one of my gifts. Small crisis, not necessarily so much. I'm a lot better than I used to be. But for years, it was like, okay, if the house is burning down, I can handle that. But if Bob brings home a pizza when I had planned a chicken for dinner, you know, couldn't handle that. The mark of a spiritual person is how well we handle those little things. And I think that the reason that is because we all have, and this is a huge thing, when I started to look at this so that I could even consider letting go of it, it began to change my life in huge ways. What we often have is an idea of the way things should be. Should be. Even it's reflected in our language. Well, it wasn't supposed to rain today. Well, it's raining. It must have been supposed to rain. But we say that. What we mean is the forecast yesterday didn't indicate rain today. But we say it wasn't supposed to rain. It was supposed to be 80 degrees and sunny. Well, apparently it was not supposed to be 80 degrees and sunny, or it would be. You know, he was supposed to be here on time. I was supposed to be able to do this, and now I have to do that. That idea of the way things should be is, to me, the biggest block in my spiritual path. It's the biggest obstacle that I have to overcome, is to let things be the way they are rather than the way I think they should be. And the other thing that goes along with that is it's not fair. Anybody got an it's not fair, Gene? I have a really, really strong it's not fair, Gene, and I want things to be fair. And the truth is, thank God life isn't fair. Because if I had to experience every consequence of everything I ever said or did or thought, not necessarily good. I don't know what fair is because I've been handed one piece of a jigsaw puzzle. And this is mine to work at. It's mine to work at to make it as beautiful as it can be and to try to find where it fits best. But I do not see the whole puzzle. All I see is a tiny piece. And so I don't know what's fair. I don't know what the long-term consequences of anything are. And that helps me a lot during these times when it seems like everything is not as it should be, to remind myself that, yeah, everything is as it should be. You know, there's still a power in charge of the universe, and I call that power love, and I call it God. And that power, I don't. If I only believe in it sometimes, then it's neither love nor God. Because both love and God are unconditional, ever-present, always, or they're not. And so when I start to doubt that I'm in the right place or doing the right thing or things are happening the way they're supposed to or they're not supposed to, then I have to remember that I don't have the big picture. And I choose this day to believe that love is in charge of the universe. And when I go forth through my day acting as if love is in charge of the universe, then I get to let go of my little paltry fantasies and fix-its and helpings. I get to let go and step back and pay attention to what's going on with me. Because the one thing I kind of can control is my own actions, my own words, my own thoughts to a degree. And letting go of false ideas about others, about the way they should be. Now, this is hard because when you're in a car, you've taken driver safety. You know what the rules of the road are. You know what the laws are, and people are breaking them all around you. So why shouldn't you be able to instruct them in some way? That's what I always want to do. I want to instruct. hey, you know, no. But this idea was put into my head from a daily reader that I got long ago, and it is dog-eared, and it is underlined and highlighted, and the page is ratty because I have to go back to it over and over and over again. And what it says basically is, we never know what's right for anyone else because we don't know what lesson they're here to learn. So even if it doesn't follow the rules of driver safety, maybe part of their lesson is to ignore those rules and experience some consequence or some learning from that. We don't know. And you really can't instruct people from a moving car. It just doesn't work very well. And in Texas, you might get shot. So how much happier are we if we go, ooh, okay, you want to be there? Be there, by all means. And we continue on our merry way. And letting go of the ideas about ourselves, the way we should be. And I think probably the biggest thing we all have to learn on the spiritual path is the truth of our own worthiness. So many of us, I don't know if we're born with it, or I don't know if we just started getting those messages right away about the way we should be, and the fact that we kind of don't measure up at any time to the way we should be. And it's a beating when we do that to ourselves. It's a beating when other people do it to us. But in Don Miguel Ruiz's The Four Agreements, he says, you know, you can't, and I think Eleanor Roosevelt actually said years ago, no one can make you feel less than unless you agree. You have to agree with it in order for it to have power over you. So I suggest that we start disagreeing. I was just at a songwriters conference, and the keynote was Julie Gold, who wrote the song From a Distance. From a Distance. What an amazing person she was. So down to earth. And she said, she talked about the number of rejections and rejections and rejections and rejections, not just from her songwriting, but from that song, that it got in front of a bunch of people that said, you know, this is some fairy tale. This is never going to be a hit. No one's ever going to make any money out of this. You know, maybe publish it on your own, but nobody's going to publish it. And then, you know, and then she picked up a teddy bear and squished its belly, and it went doo 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 doo. It's not even just the people who have recorded that song. It's in music boxes and teddy bears and on signs, and it's been recorded by 60 different artists around the world. People who don't speak. It's been recorded in languages that Julie didn't even know existed. And she said, basically, she had one thing that was what kept her going through all of this, is when she would get a rejection letter, she would say, they're wrong. Yeah. She did not agree. She did not buy into someone else's opinion of what she knew with her artistic integrity was the truth. Whether it's a hit song or it's not, it was a true song for her when she wrote it. And her idea was, they're wrong. They're wrong. And turns out, you know, she's lived the rest of her life on that one song. On that one song. Every time somebody buys one of those teddy bears, she gets a royalty. So that idea of not being in agreement with others or even with ourselves when we start to denigrate ourselves, we were made in the image of God, the image of love. I seek to know God and love God and my neighbor. Jesus said that's the whole commandments. So if I'm going to love God, there's really only one way I can do that, and that's to love you and love me. You know, I can't put my arms around this thing I call love or God, but I can put my arms around you. I can metaphorically put my arms around me. I can let my own mind be a safe place for me to dwell. Is your mind a safe place for you to dwell? What are you agreeing to that you really don't want to agree to anymore? And also, it's letting go of the thoughts of lack and fear. And, you know, we talk about tithing. We're doing the prosperity program. And tithing is, it's an open secret. It does work that when we open ourselves with generosity, that we open up a flow for things to come in and go out again. And it's not about the money. Money just happens to be a very quantitatively definable way to say, oh, I gave this much and I didn't run out, or I gave this much and then I got this money from this weird place, or whatever. Our needs are met. But letting go of money, whether it's a tithe or not, whether it's a gratuity that you give somebody, whether it's buying the brand that you really want instead of the store brand because it's, you know, 14 cents more. I mean, I mostly buy the store brands, but if I like the other brand better, I'm going to pay for it. And all of that is sort of a spirit of generosity. And what I find is it's that anything I give away is a demonstration of me letting go of the fear that I won't have enough. That's all it is. That's all tithing is. It's sort of a boxed in way to do it, but give somebody a good tip. You know, if you know, you give a $30 tip if you pay $150 at a fancy restaurant. What I like to do is give a $30 tip at the Waffle House. Because that person is making at the fancy restaurant is going home with hundreds of dollars in their pocket. And I'm telling you, the girl at the Waffle House, if she has $100 in her pocket, she waited on 100 people. And that kind of open generosity, I believe we can't lose from it. We can't lose from it if it comes from a place of, I am not afraid. I believe that there is an energy and a power and a love in this world that takes care of me, and I am not afraid. That's about letting go. And then letting go of outcomes. We get to express what our heart's desire is. You don't have to let go of your dream. Sometimes you might have to let go of what you think it's going to look like. Make a bigger space for God's imagination, which is larger than my imagination. That's our word for today. Imagination, or to tap into that imagination of God that's available to me. I have to make a bigger space than here's what it has to look like. I have a friend who talks all the time about how she really, really, really wishes she had someone to love in her life. It's so important to her. She talks especially to a couple of her close friends who have who are in good relationships. And she says, that's what I want. But when I hear her talking, she says, we say, well, have you? And she's like, well, no, it has to be somebody like this. Well, did you? No, it has to be. She's got the door open this wide. And maybe somebody will come through it. It's not impossible, but aren't the chances a lot better with a wide open door? So that's all we're doing. We're opening the doors wide when we let go. When we're holding on, we may get to keep the thing that we're squishing to, but we don't have any hands to take hold of anything else at that moment. And as the manna from heaven to the Israelites wandering in the wilderness, even what they held on to rotted. It didn't stay. It's not good anymore when you hold on to it. So letting go of outcomes, even in our prayers, even unto death. And when I say that, sometimes we have to let go of people. We have to let go of, you know, my husband and I are big animal people. We rescue a whole bunch of animals. And when you choose to love animals, you pretty much make the bargain that you're going to outlive them most of the time. And any time you decide to love a little critter that doesn't have a human lifespan, chances are you're going to have to lose that little critter at some point. And that's part of loving. That's part of truly loving, is being willing to lose. And last time I checked, the human death rate was 100%. We are going to lose everybody that dies before us, and they are going to lose us when we are gone. But being open to that loss, being willing to love right now in this moment without condition, helps us to bear that loss. When we put conditions around that love, then we don't get to experience it fully. And when it's gone, I think it hurts worse. I'm at the age where a lot of us are losing our parents. And what I have learned is that those of us who had a really good, loving relationship with our parents, the grief is actually easier than for those who have a lot of strife in their relationship. And You know, I pay attention to that. I don't want to have a strife with people that I love. I want to open a little bit more. And remember that when we pray, and we can have an outcome in mind. I mean, we get to want what we want. But if we want what we want and we hold on to that so tight that nothing else is going to be okay, then we are choosing our own misery. And we remember that prayer is to change us. It's not to change God. Things are happening the way they're happening. And I believe that there is order in the universe, that there is a divine order. My pain is when I try to go against that divine order. But when I allow myself to be changed in my prayer with a loving God, then that is when my prayer works. When I allow to have whatever good is for me in this moment. So, in conclusion, there's a wisdom within us that is the voice of God in every single one of us, that is the direction of God, the very life of God living us. Not even just living through us, but God is living us right now. We are an expression of God living, and when we surrender to it, and I can attest to this, because a lot of times I don't, and it hurts, and sometimes I do, and it's amazing how much, I don't know what I did with all the time that I was holding on to. I mean, how did I even get anything done, you know? Because now I let go a lot, and I still don't have enough time. So when we surrender to it, life is made richer and easier and more joyful and more abundant. Not because God is, oh, well, you're doing a good job, I'm going to give you more. But because we're open to receiving. We're teachable. We're in a position where we're willing to receive what is already there for us, available in every moment, when we can let go of holding on to our idea of how things, people, our own selves should be. And that includes letting people off the hook. Not forgiving is really punishing yourself for someone else's crime. Think about it. They're going their merry way. You're the one that has to deal with the feelings of hurt and whatever it is, hatred, anger, resentment. When you forgive, you allow yourself out of prison. And we should not be serving prison sentences for things that others do to us. We just shouldn't.